back. WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. As you can see from our YouTube and our Facebook Live, we are keeping calm and we are staying local. Don Mohler joining us here, and we have been in a flurry of conversation with mayoral candidates. And we've talked to all of these candidates literally over the last 7 or 8 months, several of them now twice. Sheila Dixon joined us a couple of weeks ago and now back again. Don, we've come a long way from that crab cake at Fadley's, which feels like 2 weeks ago, right?
I want to say welcome back to the former mayor. And Sheila, did you ever imagine when we spoke 2 weeks ago where we'd be today? Could you even conceive
I'll be honest with you. I would not think that we were going to be where we are today. And I will say that I am really impressed and pleased with the proactiveness that Governor Larry Hogan has taken in keeping the public apprised, making the various changes on a daily basis, as well as communicating in a very concise manner so that citizens in the state of Maryland have been informed, and that, you know, recommendations that are being provided on a daily basis have been extremely helpful.
Sheila, during your time, all these years, and you were involved in government, the biggest crisis you ever dealt with was what? And, Governor O'Malley spoke to us about the fire under the city. He didn't even know there were trains under the city.
Howard Street Tunnel.
Yeah, but for you and all the years, this is obviously the biggest, but what's next in line as you remember it?
Well, let me say this, and I guess to some degree, I was pretty blessed to not to have any catastrophes. You know, we had an incident where a paramedic in training passed away, and we came up with a procedure and process as relates to that. But one of the things that we put in place, and I know Governor O'Malley had it as well, but what we did was we created the emergency preparedness department, where we met regularly to talk about any issues that would have impact, because at that time, of course, you remember we had 9/11, which happened. I was city council president. Martin O'Malley was mayor. So we began to put things in place there. You had the Howell Street fire. And, you know, we had some incidents where I think this was more under Martin than even me, with police officers being shot and killed. But we try to meet regularly just to go through trainings with not only our departments, but also reaching out to the citizens of Baltimore in case some type of emergency happened, and having an exit plan as well as a preparedness plan in place for city government as well as a citizen. And so we would go through constantly, maybe quarterly, the trainings and drills and keeping our public informed about if something happens. These are the parameters and things that will be in place.
Sheila, it's interesting when you look back, you think about those times when you had to go into emergency mode. You were complimentary, as so many have been, regarding Governor Hogan, and I think that's trickled down. There's nothing partisan about any of this. It's trickled down to Democratic county executives like Johnny O and Stuart Pittman and Calvert Ball, and Republican county executives like Barry Glassman. Seems like state and local government has truly stepped up in this time of crisis to take the lead on so many of these issues. And it seems to me that this issue is really reshaping the mayor's race in the following way, in that I imagine that voters are now thinking, this could happen again. I mean, we hope we're going to vote on June 2nd. We'll see how this plays out between now and then. But this is probably not the last pandemic in our lifetime that we're going to face. And I would think that voters are saying, okay, out of these top six candidates that are now left in this race, and six candidates all bunched pretty close in the polls, how do I choose the one that I think's ready on day one to manage this type of thing? What would you say if we were still doing town halls and forums? What would you say to those voters?
Well, what I would say to the voters is that, one, we put together a whole emergency preparedness plan. Right now, the director of the emergency department has left city government. And so, number one, I'm going to make sure that we have the right person in place to head up that agency, as well as on day one, making sure that all of our departments and agencies are really focused on being prepared for whatever type of emergencies are going to come up, and so that we're communicating that, because there are different couple things that are happening here in the city. One, I just heard today that the homeless plan that's in place, that some services are going to be eliminated, that there are some homeless individuals that have gone to healthcare for the homeless who have maybe potentially some signs of the coronavirus, and now being turned away because there's a disconnect between an agreement that the city had and with healthcare for the homeless, and being able to pick up those individuals and taking them to a partnering site to be able to evaluate. So we have to make sure whatever the plans are that in place, that we have the connections with each other, with all our agencies and organizations, and that that line of communication is very clear, concise, and that we, that people maintain a, not only a calmness, but also a sense of urgency where if something happens, we know where to direct people and what we need to do to make that happen. And I'll be honest with you, I'm not feeling that as well right now as it relates to some of the most vulnerable populations here in the city.
Sheila Dixon joining us here, former mayor. She is running for mayor. You heard her on Baltimore Positive recently as part of our equal time here, and the fact that we like a spirited discussion all the way around the political debate, especially since we've moved the election back to June 2nd. Former Mayor Sheila Dixon here joining us here. You know, Sheila, I've told this story this week because today's a pretty special day. It was 6 years ago today that my wife was diagnosed with cancer. And it's fascinating because all of the pictures from that time when she was a blonde and she went bald, we're wearing masks. And it's not something we think about a lot or talk about a lot. It was 6 years ago. I mean, she's had two battles. She's healthy. She's beautiful. Everything's good. But the notion of the masks and where our education was 6 years ago, yesterday, before she was diagnosed. I was a 45-year-old college-educated guy. I've been on the radio 25 years, been around the world. I really didn't know about viruses and bacteria and washing your hands and elbow bumps, which I still do 6 years. I might have probably elbow bumped you at Lexington Mar. I think we did an elbow bump a couple weeks ago because we mentioned this virus. I'm pretty sure we did do that. And that all came 6 years ago, but the first 45 years, I had no knowledge of this. What we've heard, not even rhetoric, I don't, you know, when you call it a hoax and 2 weeks later, now you want to get everyone off the beach and out of the malls and out of St. Patrick's Day and taking it seriously. This has really been, over the last 6 weeks, a lot of disinformation, and now we're trying to get the real information into the hands of people that might aren't, they're not watching CNN or watching the evening news. Maybe to your point, they're part of the underserved community in any way, anywhere, that we have people that are served with the education who aren't following the rules. I think the hardest part of this from a leadership standpoint, when we go back to that word, and I think we used it with you, trust. You know, trusting what the leader is saying and trusting what Dr. Fauci is saying, let's say, and then getting that information across every segment of our society. Leadership and trust, it goes back to that, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And let me just give you an example. On Monday, we hosted, as part of our mayoral Monday, I had the former health commissioner, Dr. Joshua Sharfstein, who was health commissioner under my administration, who we had on our Facebook Live, and we had over 2,000 people who were watching and participating and with asking questions, some very valid questions. And so, you know, so we immediately said, who could we reach out to? And we had reached out to Dr. Sharfstein on Friday and had a conversation with him because I trust his expertise. I trust his knowledge, and asked him, and he offered this to anybody who wanted him to come on their site. But we jumped on it right away to make sure that we could give people as much information. But keep in mind, 6 years ago, we had the swine flu. So there have been, for the last 20 years, various viruses and incidents that have happened within through the country and beyond. But what we have to do is, you know, it's just like when we had the flu or the swine flu and the other viruses, and we went through this whole campaign of people coughing in their cuffs of their arm sleeves, et cetera, et cetera. You know, but what's interesting is when I went to visit a school for American Education Week, and I was reading a story, and this child started coughing. That child, this is the first grade, coughed in their cuffs. So they're still doing it. But then when you run into adults, and then I see them coughing just out without covering up, and I said, you know, sometimes we get too comfortable. So we have to constantly reinforce to people certain sanitation things that have to be done, sanitary things that have to be done. You know, you can't let loose. On top of the current president of the United States cut back on some of the funding with the infectious disease department with the CDC, where we probably could have taken over a group of scientists early on when it broke out in the beginning in China to really get a handle and kind of test and whatever they do to then come back. We have to make sure that all levels of government, even if something is not going to happen right now, that we have plans in place to be prepared so that we can take those documents or those plans off of the shelves and be willing and ready to do whatever it takes and making sure with that we can keep people safe. Because the bottom line is that these are people's lives. And so I'm going to be honest with you. I've been out not, you know, I've been keeping myself consciously away from people as I talk to people, but as I walked around in certain neighborhoods on the weekend to really kind of emphasize the importance of this, as well as to share information that has gone out about the coronavirus, but also parents and kids at a home, when I said to children and their parents, I was like, this is not a vacation for your kids. Make sure you contact the school and get those packages, or if you have the ability to do it online. And some of them weren't even aware about that. So we have, you know, because this isn't a vacation. Okay.
Well, I
shouldn't put words in your mouth, but one of them you just talked about, Sheila, when you went to some of those neighborhoods, some of those children weren't even aware. I think, again, there are lessons and then there are unintended consequences that come out of crises. And it seems to me that this crisis has once again exposed an equity issue in the United States, particularly when it comes to the digital divide. And I wonder, as a mayoral candidate, is that an issue that you look at for city residents and city children and can make some kind of a difference as a mayor to begin to bridge that digital divide?
Oh, clearly, yes, because let me just share something with you. I was speaking to a parent whose child goes to a private school, a Catholic school, Mercy, and at Mercy, those kids are, and of course, you know, they pay for the laptops or pads, you know, as part of their tuition, but they have to be dressed in uniform at 8 a.m. in the morning at their computer, going through their classes. Of course, they get that break, you know, the lunch break, but they're doing all their classes online. And what, as well as my son-in-law, who is a teacher in high school in New York, they had to take last week and call every parent and child, find out if they have computers or tablets, because they're going to be having instructions online. And those who don't have it, Apple and other companies have agreed to help provide those computers. So what part, you know, even in the past, I was working on a plan to increase free internet services for in low-income families. But what this does is it emphasizes more than ever that we have to come in line and make sure that our young people in our classes have the kind of technology needed today in order to function. Because keep in mind, what if school is canceled for the rest of the year? And, you know, how many packets of materials can you give individuals? And then who's going to be lax or who's going to be disciplined with their children and their families? Because yesterday, I'll be honest with you, I was out in this community delivering some products, some baby products and other things to a particular place. And I ran across a group of young men, I guess they're between the ages of 17 and 19, 20. And I said to them, look, y'all hanging out here on the street, you know, talking and all, but do you realize the importance of this? And I asked one of them, I said, who's in school that's amongst this group? And one young man raised a hand. I said, okay, have you gone and picked up your package yet? Do you have a computer at home or a laptop? And he admitted, he said, no, I haven't gone to school and picked up my package. No, I don't have a laptop. And I'm like, and, you know, and I can sometimes, you know, these young guys and young people, you know, I try to talk straight and be honest. I was like, so what are you waiting for? You know, what are you waiting for? You know, to go get that. I said, this is not a vacation for you.
And it's hard.
Yeah,
I feel like I'm in the principal's office right here between the two of you right now, right?
Well,
I mean,
you know what? That's the teacher in me, and it always is in me, no matter where I am and who I'm talking to, particularly young people. Because, you know, you want the best, and you want to emphasize it. You don't want to lecture and point the finger, but you want to emphasize to them, look, what if school doesn't open between now and June, and they decide that everything has to be done in this system? And that's why I pray and hope that Baltimore City Public Schools, you know, because keep in mind, if they clean up the schools, the teachers could be in the classroom, right? And providing those instructions from the classroom while a student is on their laptop or on their computer or on their iPad. And if they don't have it, we got to figure out a way to get them that kind of support that's needed.
Well, it's really interesting, Sheila, that you mentioned that. Nestor, you and I have not talked about this. I don't know how closely you followed the issue for the past few years in the Baltimore County Public Schools, but there was a pretty robust debate over the ratio of what we'll call tablets, devices, people call them different things, laptops, tablets, devices, to students. And originally, it was a one-to-one ratio, K through 12. Well, through a lot of give and take and back and forth with folks who didn't think it was appropriate, K through 2, now you have a situation for Baltimore County students. The county is now in the process of beginning to make sure that these devices get to the homes, have a way for the parents to get the devices for their children so education can continue. But for children K through 2, because they changed the policy, the devices are not going to be available. So I think it's interesting we talk about unintended consequences of a pandemic. I would think that this may actually require the Board of Education to revisit that issue again and say, we really need to be prepared that every child has a tablet so that there isn't this digital divide. Because as you know, if you live in Roland Park, you know, let's talk Baltimore City. If you live in Roland Park right now, there's a good chance that your child has a computer at home.
That's true, but you know, I agree. But you know what else? And this is where I have the challenge and concern, and I agree wholeheartedly. And in certain communities in the city, you're going to find that young people, probably in Sandtown, other areas, I'm going to Sandtown tomorrow, because of this homeless issue, to go live, to talk about a most vulnerable population. And believe me, I plan to ask people that I might run into in their community, do their kids have a tablet or a computer? But now also keep in mind, because most families, no matter how rich or poor, generally have TVs. And now our TVs, the smart TVs are set up where you could potentially go online on your TV. So, but again, it's about educating. It's about providing, you know, that kind of support. You know, the Kerwin Commission report, I understand, I'm going to talk to some of the legislators because I understand that they passed the Kerwin Commission's recommendations, and I think they passed some tax incentive, and I don't know what it is. I just haven't followed up on what it is, but I hope in that plan that they have, that young people will have access to computers and laptops and tablets as part of their everyday learning. Because in some cases, you don't even need a book today if you have a tablet or a laptop.
Absolutely. We are with former Mayor Sheila Dixon, wants to be mayor again. We are committed here at Baltimore Positive. We are going to, during this quarantine situation, we're going to do our best to keep voters connected with the candidates. We're going to have them on regularly. We want to remind everybody that the election that was scheduled for April the 28th is now rescheduled for June the 2nd. We hope we'll be able to do that. Sheila, talk to us a little bit. I mean, even for those of you who have run many, many times, we're now in the midst of a campaign that we've never seen before. Tell us what a campaign looks like in the midst of a quarantine.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, because I had a little interference. What were you saying?
No problem. Tell us what a campaign looks like in the midst of a quarantine.
So that's a whole another process.
Well, you know what? Sheila, I joke with all of you. You can't shake hands and kiss babies. Like, that's the politician thing, right?
Right, and you can't do that. And so what we're doing is, the strategy changes every day. One, we are reaching out to individuals who've been volunteering on our campaign to do phone banking from home, and we can track that, you know, based on the voter list. We're also still doing lit drops, but we're not, knocking, ringing on bells. We're just doing the lit drops. We're putting the mail in the mail slots. All of our volunteers that are going out doing the lit drops, they know, one, to wear gloves, but also to sanitize their hands when they're finished. We are re-strategizing our, now that the election is going to be in June instead of April, you know, what that's going to look like. Where, you know, of course you're constantly raising money so we can go on TV, so we can get our mailers out. So there's so many things. We're encouraging our seniors to do absentee ballots in particular, as well as coming up with a strategy if the election comes down to a mail-out ballot, which, interestingly enough, we've been sharing that information when we heard rumor that might happen. Of course, you know, the congressional one is April the 28th or the 7th. They're going to be doing a mail-in or mail ballot. So it's like every day something is changing. Of course, we're trying to increase and enhance our social media. Yesterday, we did, for the Key Highway Community Association, we had a teleconferencing forum where we had five of us, were part of that, and the community tuned in by either listening by phone or coming on their computers. And that was an interesting candidate forum that took place. So and some other candidate forums that have been canceled, I guess people are going to be rethinking how they do those candidate forms. I know, every day things are changing.
Yeah, Nestor, you want to let the folks know again, we're going to take another look at our forum that we were going to have all six of the candidates on April the 14th. We're going to take another look at that, right?
Well, yeah, and we're getting everyone on here. Obviously, we have no sports on the radio side, and the Baltimore Positive story of the election moving forward from the middle of April, our forum is going to move into May. We're going to organize all that. We're here with Sheila Dixon, former mayor of Baltimore. She's running again. We're having all the candidates on. You can find all that up at Baltimore Positive and the buyatoyota.com audio vault. I want to remind everyone, small business, if you are a small business owner in Baltimore, I will be telling stories of small business owners. Toss me an email, ness@baltimorepositive. I'm going to try to use our airtime here to feature businesses. And Sheila, you know, I took a walk into Federal Hill on St. Patrick's Day night looking for a little corned beef and cabbage because I did want to take a little takeaway, and we have to walk around, and the weather's going to get better here soon as well. Public safety, it's the first thing all of you as mayor candidates, it's been on all of your agenda. It's the number one problem we have in the city. I am concerned about no one on the street and businesses going out and how many businesses are already shuttered in the beginning part of this and what it's going to do to desperation, crime, people on the streets. I know you and I talked about squeegee boys and dirt bikes and all that stuff. The squeegee boys are still out, at least as of Thursday they were. And, the pandemic and then the crime that comes, we remember in the aftermath of Freddie Gray, the pharmacies, targets of gangs and professional hits and all of that going on. I do have some concern about that because the police already had a lot going on, and obviously, everyone in the medical world, doctors, nurses, first responders of any kind, this is really going to tax us, and I'm worried about our police, and I am worried about crime and public safety during this lockdown period.
No, I agree, and as mayor of the city of Baltimore, the first thing that I would have done, and I don't think it's been done, is our first responders need to be able to have the test done for the coronavirus that has not been done. That would be number one, because they're going to be the ones interacting with all types of people. and they need to be tested so we can make sure that they're healthy. And if not, we need to make sure that they go home until they can recover. Secondly, I think that, you know, crime potentially could go down in some ways because you don't have people out on the street. There have been some incidents going on. I've seen the police presence probably more now than I've seen in a while in a lot of neighborhoods, particularly when parents and children are coming to the different sites to pick up their lunches and breakfasts. We were at a site yesterday where in a community where individuals were picking up food for lunch and breakfast, and there was a presence of police there. I saw a presence of police in another area I was at. But I do hope and pray that something changes where we get the test kits so that our first responders, because we want to make sure that they maintain it are healthy. And I don't think that's being done. But I would hope and pray that things are dying out. Crime will go down because people are staying in. So traffic has gone down drastically.
No, every part of our society has slowed down, which we would love to see that bar graph do that in about 2 weeks too, right?
Yeah, definitely.
So what can you, as you get it, as you've been out and around, you talk to folks, are there it seems to me there are inspirational stories that are coming out of these dark times. What has inspired you over the past week to 10 days when things look pretty grim and then something happens and you go, daggone it, people are pretty good. What's inspired you that you can share with your listeners?
Well, what has inspired me is that, one, people have reached out to us and we haven't posted it on social media or anything, asking for assistance in food and baby formula and diapers, et cetera. And we've taken money out of our pockets and provided it to some communities. I noticed other people are helping their neighbors, particularly their elderly neighbors. When we were out this weekend in Emerson Village, we had people that were delivering food. I actually did that just earlier today to some people that were elderly and that are somewhat sickly and very vulnerable to could potentially get in the virus as a result of the current sicknesses that they have. And there's so many people that are doing that, reaching out to folks. And that's where people come together in Baltimore in so many ways. So I've seen a lot of that going on in this last week or two.
Sheila, we really appreciate the time. And, I know it's been busy. It's been crazy. Appreciate your service out helping people. And it was really good to get to meet you a couple weeks ago. We've had a lot of positive feedback on our first chat. I'm sure we will now. I appreciate you first agreeing to stop by on April 14th to be part of our forum. We're going to reschedule that a little later on as we've rescheduled everything. Constant adjustment here, right? Infinite flexibility. That's the key to immortality, right?
That's our sponsors. Go ahead,
yes,
Sheila.
It is. And also, it's very, really key, and this is something that happened Sunday. We had our service online, and we had three people who participated. One was a person who worked at the health department, just kind of sharing basic things that people need to do. And then one of our ministers, who also was a psychologist, she got on to try to get people to stay calm, not stress out, not have anxiety. And then we had a motivational coach get on to show you where to touch. It's like acupuncture, where you touch certain parts of your head, your shoulders, your arms, your hands, to really kind of relieve some of that stress. So it's really kind of emphasizing that to people, to be calm and not stressed out, because that can cause other things to happen.
There's so much going on. Really appreciate you stopping by. Before we let you get away, I just want to remind everyone again, as we go through this, small business, small business, small business.
Yeah.
Eat out. Go to carry out more than you normally would. Support all your restaurants. We have great friends that support us at Baltimore Positive, at Sadley's, at State Fair. One of our new sponsors, Jeff Moeller and Moeller and Gary Realtors. Jeff reminded me today that when people are quarantined, it's actually a great time to begin to look online at houses. So if you're thinking about buying and selling, keep, you know,